It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast here. Very, very excited for our next guest. It's Eric Eaton, who's been newly named the head men's basketball coach at St. Michael's College. Comes to the Purple Knights with a lot of experience at the Division I level. Has helped be an assistant or associate coach on a number of Division I programs, including Holy Cross, Quinnipiac, Albany, and Iona. Eric, congratulations on the job, man. Thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we appreciate you stopping by also. And I guess I'll just start with this. Why was this job a good fit for you?
Well, I know the league very well. It's you know, I started off playing Division III, coaching Division III, moved up and coached Division II, and it's levels of basketball that I have great respect for and have always followed. And the NE10, having grown up in Worcester, Mass, and coached the year at Assumption, know the league very well. My wife actually played basketball at Assumption, so she knows the league very well. And I've always been looking for a school where I think my family and I fit. And the school fits me. I think that's really, really important for a head coach. St. Michael's did that. The people were phenomenal. From the minute I got on the phone with anybody through the interview process, coming up to campus, really, really true family and community atmosphere here. And it's really, really fits us well. And we're thrilled to not be quite a part of it yet because we haven't moved. But when we can get in knee deep, we're looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure I'll be the 37th person to ask you this question, though. I understand you have respect for Division III, for Division II, but you were at four Division I programs, helped coach teams that went to NCAA tournaments, almost pulled massive upsets in NCAA tournaments. I'm sure you could have had a Division I head coaching job. Why did you not go that route?
You know what? There were opportunities that I interviewed for, and things just didn't work out. And I've had a thirst to be a head coach since I started doing this.
Yeah.
Back in, 1998, 99, I believe it was, seems like so long ago. So my view of it is coming from the lower levels as a player, you know, that's really never been a big deal to me as far as the status of it and things like that. I've always been more about fit and more about, just the grassroots piece of it. I love the opportunity to influence, young adults and student athletes and be a part of whatever part of their life they choose to let you in to be. My college coach, Brian Baptiste at UMass Dartmouth, was a huge influence on me, and really did a lot for me through my time there and helped me grow. So that's really the most important thing to me. And you know what? I was looking for something that I thought was going to be a really, really good opportunity to win and build, and St. Michael's provided me with that. So I'm really, really indebted to them and, going to give everything I got every minute.
Well, when you're an assistant coach at the college level, a lot of it is about building. A lot of it is about being mobile. A lot of it's about moving up the ranks, and you've certainly done a good deal of that, being at multiple different schools over the last two decades or so. How nice is it for you to finally be able to be established in one spot and know that you're here for the long term as opposed to, okay, what's the next move? What's the next move?
So, you know what? That's a big part of it, too. My five twin sons that are 12 years old, and I've been saying to my wife, for the last couple of years, we have eight more years with these guys. We have seven more years with these guys. Now it's six more years with these guys before they're off to college. Yeah. And, the opportunity to have them in the gym anytime. I'm fortunate that, during the time I had my sons at Coach Moore at Quinnipiac and Coach Kloos at Iona were really, really good with letting kids be around, and some of our other assistants had kids too. But it's just different when you're the head coach. They're coming on the bus, they're sitting on the bench, they're coming in the locker room. That being afforded that opportunity is tremendous. And, I feel really fortunate to be able to do it and really looking forward to so many of the different experiences that we'll have together as a family. And as we get to know the people in the community, how we'll be able to fit in there and make friends and get settled, like you said, to have that kind of not be looming, because it always is when you're assistant coach, it can always be looming there in the distance. And you kind of try not to think about it, but you still know it's there. And to kind of take that off our minds and just say, look, this is what we're doing and this is where we're at. And we're going to dig in deep and do what we can and enjoy life in this area. It's such a beautiful, beautiful area to live. And we couldn't be more thrilled to be here.
what's the first thing that you do when you get on campus? We are taping this in early August. It's going to come out more towards early September. So this question, you will have already done that first thing by the time this comes out, but I'm curious what your plan of attack is. What's the first thing you do when you get on campus?
When I get there, and we're here going on when the kids are moving back, I just want to try to meet as many people as I can. I want to be here for our student athletes on my team and the other kids coming in. I've already met a few of them on different teams. I've met some of the coaches. Some of the coaches have reached out to me by phone and said hello, which was phenomenal. But I think just to kind of show my face and let them know who I am and get to meet them and just start to experience what St. Michael's is all about, why it's such a special place, and enjoy it. I think a lot of times you can kind of go in with, you know, a laundry list of 25 things that you have to do, and these things are so vital and so on and so on. And other than number one, making sure my family is comfortable, and number two, recruiting, which has to be done every second of the day, that's the most important thing to me, is just trying to get to see everybody and make myself visible and let people know that, hey, the basketball coach here is all about the school and all about, you know, helping everybody out and what can I do for you, and enjoying it. 'Cause I mean, I get to work on a college campus, man. I got no complaints about that.
You know, I played college baseball, and I was part of a team that went 1-17 in the league my junior year, and it was a horrendous year, and we were awful, and it was just a downtrodden place to be. We end up getting a new coach for my senior year, and then the next year we went 8-10 in the league, and then after I graduated, they're going to the College World Series. So it was pretty quick to flip the switch between the two, you know, between the two programs, and it was all about a culture change that new coach brought in. How do you change the culture for a program that hasn't done a lot of winning over the last few years?
You know what, that word is thrown around in every press conference and every interview with new coaches and every sport. And I think I'm blessed that when I look at culture, the things that I look at are, what's the character of the student athletes in the program? How are they doing academically, and how do they behave socially? And I have those three things. I have zero issue. It's not something where I have to come in and clean up some kids that haven't been doing the right things and things of that nature. There are really, really good kids in the program. They're dedicated academically. They're active on campus. They're very supportive of other student athletes and other programs on the campus. They have a reputation on campus as being really, really good people. So from that standpoint, I'm lucky that I'm going into a situation where there's some people who understand the things outside of basketball. I only have basketball things to worry about. So that makes me really, really lucky. And these guys, I sense in them and some of the teammates that I've already spoken to, that there's a hunger to learn what's going to be new. How can we be better? And that's huge. That's huge. I don't understand. You know, sometimes guys are like, well, these kids and this, and I don't think that's the case at all. So I'm going into it with completely open eyes and trying to get to know the guys. And, you know, my job is going to be to see how they fit into the way I want to play. The film that I've watched, you know, I think it shouldn't be very difficult for any of them to fit into the way I want to play and get up and down the floor. And then the next piece of it's going to be recruiting. You know, we both know that, you know, you played and you saw it. So you got to get out there and you got to find guys that I think will fit the school and fit the way I want to play and fit me personality wise. I want tough kids. I want kids that play with an intensity level. I want kids that play really, really hard and that have a super high level of competitive fire in their belly. So, you know, I'm going to try to pull that out of the guys on the team as best I can and squeeze every ounce out of it, and then go find more guys to come in the future and be that next level of Purple Knights to take the program to where everybody wants it to be.
One of the things that was most important to me when I graduated from my program was being an alumni that felt engaged with the program and was still kept in the loop about things. And it really gave you that sense of pride that when the turnaround happened, that you still felt like you were a part of it, even though you weren't on the field. So if we have St. Michael's basketball alumni listening, what's your plan to incorporate them into this program?
You know what? I am so open-minded and looking forward to meeting and speaking to any and every one of them. I'd love to have them come back, or certainly the games, but I know there's a ton of people that live in the area. So I'd love to have them back, you know, for a meet and greet. I'd love to have them come, you know, hit me up and want to come to practice and come check out practice so they can see the progress and they can see the intensity level and they can kind of get a real tangible feel for it. Because I think that's vital, and you know, the relationship that you have with the place that you played to me, doesn't make any difference as far as your wins and losses during your time there. It's the place that's special to you. You go to school, you graduate, and you wear the uniform. So that's huge to me. I love where I played, and I stay in touch with my college coach. And, although I didn't coach those guys, I want to be here, resource them to say, hey, look, you want to know what's going on? Shoot me an email, shoot me a text, call me on the phone, come to practice. They need to be involved. Because the guys on the team need them for two things. They need them, number one, so that the guys wearing the uniform understand how important the uniform is to the guys who left. Yep. And that's a big way that you build, you build your program and you build pride in putting the jersey on. And then the other thing I think it's vital for our guys on the team and the guys that come through the program is to meet guys who have graduated and played and kind of talk to them and be able to understand what their experience was like. And, what they're doing now and what they are in the professional world, because, our guys are going to be going down that same path. So to have somebody that they can start their own network professionally with, guys that either played overseas or guys that are in the business world or teaching or law enforcement or whatever their job status is, to be able to meet those guys and talk to them and start their network off, because those guys are going to be able to tell them more than I'm going to be able to tell them. I'm just a basketball coach. Those guys are in the real. I don't live in the real world. Those guys live in the real world for the most part. So they'll be able to help our guys out with, what their next step is when they graduate. And I think that's a huge part of kind of connecting the current players with the players who have been through it.
I think there's an assumption about this area that it's so hockey crazed that there's not necessarily room for anything else. But as I've been here for the last 3 years, I've noticed just how big basketball is, and the success of UVM is a big part of that. But I've been told stories about when St. Mike's was really, really good, how fun it was to go to those games as well. What do you know about the Burlington basketball culture?
Well, you know what? I've played in a lot of big games at Vermont. I've played in a lot of big games there. I've been really, really fortunate to win a league championship and an NCAA tournament bid in that building. I know what the fans in this area are like as far as basketball goes. And I've been really, really lucky to this point to have a bunch of people that I've never met before just kind of catch up with me on social media or get my number from someone on campus and say, hey, look, I'm here. We love the program. We're really excited. We want to get it back to a winning, situation. And the bottom line is, you and I both know there's plenty of people who love basketball, but they want to go watch a team with some excitement. They want to go watch a team that's playing hard, playing with some passion. And, the places that I've been, Iona is unique to that because the program goes back so far and it's been so successful. But the other schools that I was at, we were not doing well or not doing great or on the cusp of doing really well right when I got there, before or right after I got there. So those situations were the same. They want to see you win, and people want to be part of a winner and want to identify with it. And they want to see some guys diving on the floor and some passion, and some blood, sweat, and tears. And that's what we all want to be a part of. I'm a rabid Celtics fan, and, they've been breaking my heart the last couple of years, but, that's what everybody wants to see. So I invite all the people to, you want to see a team of kids that's going to play their hearts out, play the game the right way, respect the game, be great teammates with each other, and really, really have a passion for the school and the community that they represent. That's what we're going to strive to be every day we're out there. So I think, once people kind of come take a look and have some curiosity about what we're about, I hope they like what they see once they come to a game.
Well, you mentioned being fortunate to win a league title at Vermont. You're talking about your time at Albany as an assistant head coach or an assistant coach and an associate head coach there. That was earlier in your career. My advice to you as an Albany guy, don't be in here talking about Albany in front of people in this state. They don't like that very much.
No, I would imagine they don't. I'm lucky that my memories of that game are pretty good, but some other folks' memories of that game aren't great. I know Coach Becker over there very well, and I know enough not to bring that up in front of him. So, the program at Vermont has been phenomenal since with Coach Brendan. I was actually at the game when Vermont beat Syracuse in the tournament in Worcester, Mass. It's my hometown. I was at that game, and my only regret is I didn't have anything green to be wearing during that game and screaming while there were 3-point shots being bombed from about 25 feet. That was a phenomenal, phenomenal college basketball game. So the kind of passion and the history of that program, certainly not lost on me. I'm not looking forward to going over there and playing them in an exhibition at the beginning of the year, but it's something that's going to make us better as the year goes on.
Well, if you're the head coach on the sideline and TJ Sorrentin pulls up from 8 feet behind the line, what's your instant reaction?
Well, it depends. If it goes in, you kind of sit down and tip your cap to him. If it doesn't go in, you better hope somebody's boxing out and don't give him a second chance, because second chance is on him. The second one's going in. I don't think I've seen him miss twice very often. that was an amazing shot. You know how it is when the springtime rolls around and March Madness is upon us, and there's highlights constantly and this history of this, history of that. And that's one that I was fortunate enough to see live that probably doesn't get any of its undue respect for a couple of shots he made late in that game, which were just two of the most cold-blooded shots I've ever seen in all the years I've been coaching. And, he's a friend. I know him well. He's going to be a head coach at the Division I level very soon and do very well. But, man, I'll tell you what, that place was going bananas when he was making those shots and they won that game.
Well, I got to ask you one question about your Albany tenure, because before UMBC beat Virginia, there was, I think it was 2006, if I'm remembering correctly, when UAlbany as a 16 seed almost beat UConn, and it was almost the first number 16 seed to beat a number one. And I was in, I want to say, ninth grade when that happened, and I was wearing Albany stuff all over school after that game because there was just so much pride in the area. What do you remember about that game being the first 16 seed to almost beat a number one? You guys had a double-digit lead in the second half.
We did. We were up 12 with about 8.5 minutes to go in the game. Coach Brown put together a tremendous game plan. They had six guys drafted on that team and ended up losing to George Mason, I believe it was, in the Elite Eight. But, yeah. There's so many video clips of that game. We did some things that a 16 seed has to do to be, have a chance to beat a one. You have to play very well and be very talented. But you do need some luck as well. And without rehashing the exact shots, and we had some shots go in that were just out of control. I mean, we had a kid, Jason Siggers, who was from Dallas, Texas, at the probably half a second on the shot clock, just like catching almost just tip shoot a three from the corner that went in. Jamal Wilson on a screen and roll with Kirsten Zollner kind of tossed him a lob, and it was a bad pass, and Big K went up to try to get it and couldn't get it, and it just went off his fingertips and went off the backboard and went in. They missed some shots that they normally make, and I'll give our guys credit. They did a really good job of trying to, I won't say take guys out of the game, but trying to really make lives difficult to some of their bigger players. And Marcus Williams stepped up in the end and just crushed us. I mean, he made some threes late. And he didn't, I think he shot under 30% from three that year. So, but I'll tell you what, there was a point in the game where I can't remember too many times this has happened to me, but there was a point in the game where you go from a coach to almost being a fan, like, yeah, my goodness, if this happens. But, you know, UConn's UConn, so that's a tall task.
Do you get tight as a coach in moments like that? Like, I can imagine as a player tightening up if you're the 16 seed trying to pull the upset. Do you get tight as a coach?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, pressure's not on me. I don't have to make any shots, thankfully, because we wouldn't have been in that situation if anyone's dependent on me to make a shot. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think our guys just kind of ran out of some gas at that point. I mean, they had put so much energy and emotion into the game. And, you know, that's why great teams are great teams. We had made some guys struggle and kind of get frustrated, and they had one really, really good player step up and make some big plays late. And, I just kind of feel like personally we just got a little tired down the stretch and, you know, didn't have the depth that they had. So, you know, a really good team came back and beat another really good team. But, you know, it was fun. I look at it as like, you know, obviously I haven't done it as a head coach yet, so we'll see. But I look at it like, you know, you're fortunate to be there and, you know, you enjoy every second of it. The preparation, I mean, Coach Brown's a preparation guy. So we knew going into it very, 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 very confidently that we were prepared. But, you know, it's basketball. So if the ball doesn't go in, preparation goes out the window.
Well, with all due respect to Anthony Lamb of UVM, because his career is not over yet and you haven't coached against him, I got to ask you, Jamar Wilson, Taylor Coppenrath?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. That's two totally different players. Two totally different players. I mean, I'd be greedy as a coach when you recruit, you're greedy. So I'd want to take both of them. And we've played a lot of games. Just two totally different players. I mean, Taylor just multifaceted and different skill and just so big and strong. And, you know, I mean, I remember him, you know, when he was in high school and he was 6'7" and like 195 and you know, wakes up 2 years later at 6'9" and whatever he was, 230 or 240. And, you know, it was just a beast in that league. And Jamar just, you know, probably, I'd say probably the most talented player I've ever coached.
Wow.
Jamar had the skill that you can't teach to make something out of nothing with the basketball in his hands, whether it was a basket or a good shot for a teammate. And the thing I loved about Jamar, and I've heard this about Taylor as well, obviously not coaching him, but the thing I loved about Jamar was, for a kid who was coming off a Player of the Year award as a junior going into senior year, during his senior year, he worked even harder than he did during his junior year.
Wow.
He wasn't satisfied with what he had done. And I think that's why he's still playing professionally and doing very well professionally. So, man, I'll tell you what, two really top America East. Lucky to see one and coach the other.
Fast forwarding to your team at St. Mike's this year, what kind of team are we going to see? We're going to see a 3-and-D team. We're going to see a team that slows it down. What are we going to see?
Oh, we're not going to be slowing it down. You can bet on that. We're gonna get up and down the floor. We're gonna play fast paced. I want to try to maximize the depth that we have, and as we recruit and continue to improve it, I want to give guys the opportunity to play. So I'd love to be able to play 9 to 10 guys. It's really difficult and hard to do, but if everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing in practice, I don't see any reason why we can't. Want to try to get possessions up. Want to try to, you know, we play faster, more possessions, more touches for everybody, more shots for everybody. We're going to really, really share the ball. I want to be, if not the top team in the league in assists, I want to be in the top 25 in the country in team assists. Hmm. Where we're going to spread the floor out. We're going to drive it, kick it, share it, make the extra pass. We're going to really, really get after you on defense, depending on, you know, when we get in, depending on what I see with our guys. Want to try to press multiple different types of presses and do some different things. So, but that'll be dependent, you know, a little bit on personnel. And once we get going in workouts in the fall and kind of how the guys take to it and how they handle it. And we'll tweak things from there. But slowing it down is not something that we're going to do by any stretch. I don't think that's a fun way to play by any means. And it certainly isn't a fun way to coach, in my opinion. You know, we want to get it moving. We want to make it hard on the defense. We want to wear guys down, and we want to be in the best shape we can possibly be in. And I haven't had a chance to talk to many of the guys quite yet, but they're going to know you guys are going to be in the best shape of your lives. And so they can get up and down as for a long period of time. And you know, they want to outrun people, want to wear people down. And, you know, last 8-10 minutes of the game needs to be our time where we're in great shape and we're ready to go during that time. So really, really looking forward to getting going.
Do you come in here and tell the guys at first team meeting, is there a specific goal in mind? Are you talking, okay, hey, our goal is to get to the NCAA tournament. Our goal is X amount of wins. I mean, what is a successful season for you this year?
I think a successful season for me this year is going to be the same as every year, no matter what. My job and my goal and my charge every day when I roll out of bed is to get the absolute best out of every single one of those guys and get the absolute best out of myself. I'm a huge believer in whatever I'm going to ask them to do, I need to live it myself. I can't ask them to get in the gym and say, hey, you know, you guys need to get in and get some extra shots up at night, or you need to, you know, be here half an hour before practice and do this. And I'm not living that. So I'm going to be watching extra film, and I'm going to be, you know, doing extra breakdowns, and I'm going to be, you know, doing things like that. So that's what I'm going to be asking of them. The hard part about that is you just don't know, no matter what your team looks like when you start the season, you have no idea what their best is going to be. And if they're a 22-win team, a 12-win team, or anywhere in between, you have no idea. But I think by the time you get to February, you have a pretty good idea of what you should be. And hopefully by then we're playing our best basketball and getting to the point where we can feel like when we turn around and look at the season, when it's over, like, man, we probably should have been a, you know, 14-win team, but we won 17 or 18 games. We probably should have been a 20-win team, but we got to the NCAA tournament, won 25. Overachieving is the only thing that I accept, and I won't accept anything less from them, and I'm going to push myself to not accept anything less, and I expect them to not accept anything less from me. If there's ever a day where I don't have the energy that I normally have, they'll know it. They'll know it, and I'll expect one of them to say to me, like, Coach, wake up, man, because I'm going to do that to them.
You know, I've
that's what I expect.
You know, I've always been a believer, and I coached college baseball for a couple of years too. I've always been a believer that every school has its own niche when it comes to recruiting, and you just have to find what that niche is, and then that's how you can start to go attack the recruiting process. What is the sales pitch of St. Mike's?
St. Mike's is itself. You know, it's to me, in walking around campus when I was up here a few weeks ago and meeting the people that I've met and seeing what this place has to offer, it is what it is. And I think when you get kids who are going to come up here and see this place, it's impossible to not like it. It's impossible to not see the beauty of it. It's impossible to not feel the energy and the community and the friendliness and the things that you feel when you're on this campus and you're around. And I haven't even been here with students yet. You know, I've met a few of the kids that are walking around campus that are up here or live in the area, but I haven't even had the benefit of, you know, a full, you know, student body here running around and doing what they do. So I look at it as, you know, you got to get kids to come see it and understand what this place is about. And once they do that, I feel really, really confident that we'll be right there with a lot of good players because of what St. Michael's is. It's not, and I've never been a believer in this, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong or anybody else is right or wrong, but I don't believe in convincing anybody that St. Michael's is the best place for them. I'm not their family. I'm not their mom or their dad or their grandmother or their coach or whoever it is that's influencing their decision and people that they're leaning on. I've never been a believer in that. I just think it's a situation where I can explain to kids, listen, this is my background. This is what I've done. This is why I think you fit. And you need to come see what St. Michael's is about, because once you get here, if you've got a top two or top three schools, whatever they might be, we'll be one of them once you come here and you see it. And once you get a sense for what we do. And I think, you know, seeing practice and seeing our enthusiasm, how hard we go is going to be a piece of it as well. So I think if I do that and St. Michael's, you know, kind of gets its aura and its claws in the guys, I think from there on, it's going to really just sell itself.
Eric, we'll get you out of here on about three rapid-fire-ish type questions. Who has had the biggest influence on your coaching career?
I would say it's a combination of my college coach, Brian Baptiste, my mom and my dad, for sure. As crazy as that sounds, neither of them were coaches. And I think in the last couple of years, Coach Kloos at Iona has had a huge impact on me as well. Ralph Willard, where I started at Division I, probably those handful of people in many different aspects, but things I carry with me as I move forward.
NCAA tournament venues aside, where is the coolest place, the coolest venue that you have coached before?
I would have to say University of Kansas. You go into it knowing the history and knowing the aura and walking the door, and you almost have that you know, kind of Hoosiers moment when you're walking in and there's nobody in the building. But when that place is full and they're rocking, there's nothing like it.
Well, we were enjoying watching UVM play Kansas last year, and UVM played quite well there, so I can see how why that would be a popular choice. Last one, I know you don't know the area that well yet, but the thing you're most excited to do in Vermont non-basketball-wise?
Oh, boy. Probably watch my kids play.
Yeah.
and watch them flourish and meet people and do that type of stuff. I'm not a skier. I was always in the gym, so I never really got a chance to get out and ski at all. But my wife does, and one of my sons is all about snowboarding right now, so he's got that bug a little bit. But that's probably it on a personal level. You know, I'm sure that I'll get around and find out a lot of the fun things to do too. So looking forward to it.
Well, hey, Eric, if you're ever not recruiting and it's, you know, you got a small window between September and October before practice starts, but every Wednesday night, Williston Central School pickups, be there.
I heard. I'm going to have to do a little bit of running and make sure my knees and my Achilles are ready for that first. But, yeah, I appreciate it. I'll definitely try to get over there.
Eric Eaton, he's the new head basketball coach on the men's side at St. Michael's College. Lots of Division I experience over the last 20 years, looking to turn around the Purple Knights. And, look, I'm excited hearing you talk, and I think a lot of fans, alumni, players currently listening will be too. So, Eric, we appreciate the time. We look forward to making it over to the gym a couple times this year.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.